It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
All right, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. My name is KP Burke. I'm your host here. If you don't know about the show, here's what we do every week. We cover some of the biggest losers in American history. We like talking about stuff that hasn't really been talked about to death, per se. Each week, it's usually me and my father and the handsome big kahuna behind the ones and twos.
What's up?
Oh, nothing much, buddy. You know how it is. Larry's on vacation again, so there's only one person that can sub in. Ladies and gentlemen, you enjoyed her. Cousin Kelly returns. How are you, Kel?
I'm so happy to be here.
No, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. Now, you are a scholarly person, correct?
That sounds funny.
Let it be known, people, that she is so hyped for this. Like, she came in all giddy. She was like, we're going to talk about Edgar Allan Poe.
And then get called scholarly.
Well, it's my buddy Billy actually gave us a good tagline for the show, because we've had a couple good taglines. One of them was, you guys are like PBS if they were alcoholics. The other one was NPR with F-bombs. And then the other one that I enjoyed recently was, he goes, it's a show for the curious, not the scholarly.
Okay.
Which, yeah. We're not going to get it all right. We're not going to do you can't write a thesis on this show, but you can, you know, enjoy a little bit here.
Challenge accepted.
You were an English major, correct, Kel?
Yes, literature. Mm. I actually master's in literature.
See? That's there's a hierarchy
now,
which
brag.
I like.
We got some fancy – we got someone fancy up in the studio today. All right. All right.
Well, the least fancy master's in literature, but
– Well, I went to Brookdale Community College after I got out of the Navy. And one of my favorite things to talk to you about was when I was taking my short stories class over there, which I'm a dummy, and I thought it was going to be a story. We were going to write short stories in the class, but it wasn't. We were studying famous short stories. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming to you with all this stuff, and I couldn't believe, like, you and me usually talk about football.
Yeah.
Or weird stuff that our dads do.
Or television.
Yeah, or The Shield. Yeah, so this one was really cool. We had a chance to talk about this a little bit. Around this time, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, I sat down and read The Fall of the House of Usher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not Usher the hip-hop kid. a different house. It was written by, like we said, today's American loser, which is Edgar Allan Poe. Off the top of your head, Kahuna, what's the first thing that pops into your mind when you hear Edgar Allan Poe?
Telltale Heart.
That's my favorite one.
Damn, what about you? Wait, so Kel, what's the imagery that pops in your head though when you hear Edgar Allan Poe? It's always... He's not a big, sunny, happy guy.
Oh, no.
No.
He's demented, and that's why I love him. I always think about if he were, like, a current person, he would be writing the craziest shows that we would love.
I feel like he would be Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails.
He would kill it on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's a good point, too, on that one. But he was the author of The Raven, obviously, his most famous one, The Telltale Heart, The Fall of the House of Usher, The Cask of Amontillado. I mean, he was known as he had cool nicknames too. I mean, if you wanted to be a pro wrestler, he had cool nicknames. Edgar Allan Poe was the master of the macabre, and he was a central figure in American Romanticism, which is cool because it focused on individualism in literature, which was really cool, kind of a coming of age thing. This is where America starts proving to the rest of the world we got cool shit going on here too. We have culture. We're not just a bunch of backwoods.
We're not David a bunch Crook. Of savages, people.
We're still savages.
We're straight up savages, but.
But one thing I didn't know, I wasn't aware of this. Edgar Allan Poe is the father of the modern detective story. Did you know that?
I have heard that, but I have never read any of his detective stories.
Well, it's cool. I like how he played, because I never read it either. I mean, it's there's always the classics, right? Like, what was the stuff of his that you would be researching or reading for the masters in English?
Well, Telltale Heart. The Fall of the House of Usher is not one of my favorites.
It's long.
The Cask of Amontillado. None of them are really that long, but I like the ones where it's a crazy person who is the narrator, and the black cat gets me upset. But he's a crazy, and the whole time he's talking about, I'm not crazy, trying to prove he's not. Meanwhile, he is. Those are my favorite.
Can I ask you, because this is a thing that they talk about, what is, for people who don't know, what is an unreliable narrator as a literary device?
Ooh, he is... Yeah, good. Okay, so a reliable narrator is a narrator that you could trust is telling you the truth. But an unreliable narrator would say, I'm not crazy, I'm not crazy. Meanwhile, the person's crazy.
So he played around with that a little bit.
He did.
These are some cool things.
This is something I never thought about. Good for you.
That's so crazy. Like, it's such an easy name for it, but I never put a name to that type of narration. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
That there actually is a name for it.
I think unreliable narrators are the most fun.
Yeah, that... I think a good example of that recently is, you might know who this is, maybe YouTube, Deadpool. When he talks, because he talks to the audience as well sometimes, but he's not always the most reliable person to hear from.
When somebody explained, when we were trying to talk about the literary device known as an unreliable narrator, one of the professors just goes, you guys know what I'm saying? Where sometimes they don't tell, and he goes, Kaiser Soze? And all of a sudden everybody got it because Usual Suspects is just perfect.
What a great movie.
Speaking of unreliable narrators, this is kind of an interesting guy. So if he is the master of the macabre, he is one of the first ever literary critics in American history. He's got this – we just rattled off a bunch of the names of his works that everybody knows, but they don't necessarily – like everyone knows Poe. All right? Got to be one of the most famous authors in American history. So why would he be considered a loser? The reason why – his death is fascinating. Why was he found in a state of delirium on the streets of Baltimore – age 40, a couple of days before his death. He died, I think, the day after. But still, like, nobody knows the answer to this yet. We haven't solved the mystery of why Edgar Allan Poe died. So pretty fascinating guy. In order to understand what I think we should give a little background here, Kel, stop me when if I get anything wrong. First of all, you're here for my integrity. And then also if you know anything else, too, on this one, because I know he's a fascinating dude. Born Edgar Poe, the Allan would come later, on January 19th, 1809, Poe was the child of two actors, all right, and he was born in Boston, considered himself a Bostonian, which is hilarious because an NFL franchise is named after him later on. But his father abandoned the family in 1810, and then his mother would die in 1811. So if you notice, if you're keeping track at home with the American losers, nobody has a good family life, and everybody drops out of college. That seems to be the consensus for being an American loser. So stay in college, Noelle, you hear me? So he had at age two, Poe was taken in by the Allan family, A-L-L-A-N. He's never formally adopted, which is kind of funny because I'm an adopted kid. But he's never formally adopted, but he is given the Allan name. So without that early on tragedy in his life, he would just be Edgar Poe, which is way less of a good pen name than Edgar Allan Poe.
He totally would have changed it. Even if he never met the Allans, he probably would have changed it.
I think it's a good pen name, I think. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
But
Edgar Allan Poe, like it rolls really well. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like I lie and I say, like, I'm actually Kevin Burke, but there's another comedian named Kevin Burke out there, so I go by K.P. Burke because that was my nickname growing up. So good old Kevin Patrick. In 1815, Poe was then taken abroad, and he studied in Scotland and England, kind of a cool experience for a young man at that point. But as a college-aged man, you know, and he had this weird kind of relationship with his stepfather, too, Mr. Allan would discipline him severely but then also spoil the shit out of him at the same time. So it was kind of a – I don't know, maybe a – what's the word I'm looking for? A bipolar stepfather and son dynamic that they had. But he actually, as a college-age man, Poe decided to attend the brand new – it was 1 year old at the time he was there – the University of Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What do you know about them, Kel?
I know that I could never have gotten in, nor any of my children. But it's beautiful. I think it was number one most beautiful college.
Did either of your kids take campus tours down there or no?
There was no need. That would have been a waste of time.
Well, it was brand new at the time, but the school was founded. I thought this was insane. And you have college-age kids, so I'm going to ask you this one. Do you think that they should be in charge of the form of government on campus?
The kids?
Yes.
Depends on the kids. Talking about government, look what the adults are doing right now.
It depends on the college.
You have two very well-adjusted kids. But at the time – down at the University of Virginia, Thomas Jefferson had created a student-run kind of self-form of government down there. So, of course, they say on the front, like, oh, no drinking, no gambling, no prostitution, anything else. But it was all largely ignored on the campus. So it was like as long as you didn't get caught, you weren't in trouble kind of a thing. So because the students are running the government, they have more power, and all they have to do if somebody starts ruining their good time is rat them out for doing the same stuff that everybody else is doing. So it's essentially the first Animal House is taking place, and Edgar Allan Poe shows up over there, a very young, impressionable Edgar Allan Poe.
See, that's an idea. That's a movie. Yeah. I mean, they're doing that Sherlock Holmes film with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. I could see that being like an early 1800s animal.
Yeah, but Sherlock Holmes is based on Edgar Allan Poe's detective story.
Damn.
Is it really?
Did you see what Kelly just did? You tried taking us on one of those left turns, Kahuna, and Kelly's like, no
Wait a minute. Did he really?
Yeah.
That's that's crazy.
He wrote the first detective stories in
the legitimate first ever detective stories Edgar Allan Poe wrote.
Yeah, and there were references to him in Sherlock Holmes.
Wow.
It gets even weirder. Now, Poe, he kind of had his vices, if you will. So, like, when you guys think of him, you know, his portrayal in popular culture is what? People always – everybody I've mentioned that we're going to do this week for Edgar Allan Poe, people always say, oh, you know, he was an opium addict, right? You hear that a lot?
No.
It comes up a lot with him. People always think he was an opium addict, and they always think he was a big alcoholic. There's some truth to the alcoholic thing, but the opium thing, it shows up, but it shows up in the weirdest place possible. It makes almost no sense here, but – he is a man of vices, likes a little action, goes ahead and he's ringing up some large gambling debts down at the school while he's hanging out at the University of Virginia. All right.
Sending him too many of them fucking poker nights at the school.
I wonder what the gambling games were back then.
Dice, for sure.
Got to be dice.
Cards.
Imagine dice.
Yeah, they weren't doing fantasy football back then, I don't think. But he rang up these big gambling debts and he would claim that his stepfather, Mr. Allen, never provided him enough money for him to buy textbooks or even really pay for tuition, and he didn't give him enough money to even furnish a dorm room, anything like that. So Allen then sent more money, but noticed that Poe's gambling debts would continue to rise. So Poe was a little bit of a, oh, well, you know, you're not helping me out here enough, but I'm also going to keep burying myself at the same time. I've been there before where you say you're broke and then you spend your last $20 going out to the bar. But during this time, he also would lose out. If you want to talk about a loser, he loses out on the first love of his life. Talk about Edgar Allan Poe being a very sexy, if you will, name. Not a sexy name. Sarah Elmira Royster. That was his first love, if you will. He decides not to return to the university after a year because of the gambling debts and everything. And then she winds up marrying or at least engaged to another guy. So this is where Poe and me start to have a little bit in common, Kelly, which I'm thrown off by. Poe leaves the university after a year, like I left Bergen Community College, having attained a grade point average of 0.0. I dropped that after one semester.
0.0.
Why was the opposite of Poe? Because I would go to as a great
Animal House
reference. Great Animal House reference.
Two Animal House references so far this podcast.
But he went ahead and he actually joined the military, which is the same thing I did when it didn't work out for me in college. He started writing underneath an alias. His first pen name was Henry Le Rene, is what I was told, or Le Rennet. I'm not sure because we're Americans. We don't really know how to pronounce French words for the most part. But when he left the university, he headed up to Boston. He was working odd jobs as like an editor for a couple of newspapers. And let's be honest, he probably would have had a podcast at that point. I think that's what you do when your life's not going anywhere. You start a podcast with your dad.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Invite randoms.
Did they have their own big kahuna?
No, they did not. You're a treasure, my friend. Like most artists, he had no money, so he joined the army as a private in May of 1827. He lied about his age. He was 18, but he said he was 22. So he served in Boston at Fort Independence while he was there, almost like – I always think about Johnny Cash, how he wrote a bunch of his early songs while he was still in the Air Force. So Poe is writing. He releases his first book, which is literally Tamerlane and Other Poems. Did you ever read Tamerlane, Kel?
Yeah, I've read it. I can't recite it.
No one remembers it, I don't think. I think that's one of the forgotten works. But in his foreword, he wrote to endear himself to the local people that it was poems written from a Bostonian. So he's real big on playing up the whole Boston connection, which, again, when you think of Poe, we always think of Baltimore, right? But Poe made sergeant major within 2 years, which is insanity, by the way. That's how fast this dude got promoted. Sergeant major is the highest enlisted rank you can have in the military. So there's people that spend their entire – like the equivalent in the Navy would be to a chief petty officer. I knew guys that if they made that in 8 years that they were considered like prodigies. My buddy did it. And I mean, this guy, he's in 2 years and now he's got the highest enlisted rank, which means he's getting paid a shitload of money. Not a shitload, but for the time.
So is this of the time it was still hard to become a sergeant major? Do you know?
It had to because this is 1827. So you're in a post-revolutionary standpoint, post-1812. but pre Civil War and you know, war with Mexico and everything like that. So I think they're still trying to figure it out. Definitely still an accomplishment, I'd put it that way. It's a great mm-hmm. question. But it's kind of weird when you're the highest enlisted rank, but then you decide you just want out. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, I got the top pay grade. I'm done. So he decides he wants out of the military, tells his commanding officer about his fraudulent enlistment because he's like, oh, well, here's how I'll get out. I'll just tell you guys that you're fucking idiots.
And a half lap V.
Wow.
So he goes ahead and he admits to having a fraudulent enlistment, but his commanding officer won't let him leave without him writing to, you know, his stepfather, John Allen. Poe wrote several letters to Allen, none of them receiving a response. And John's wife, Frances, who had been stepmother to Poe, who he apparently had a pretty good relationship with, died on February 28th, 1829. So didn't even make it into March. That sucks. But
is that the cutoff?
Yep. Poe visited the day after her funeral, and he finally received Allen's blessing to go ahead and leave his enlistment, which was cool. So he finally gets that approval.
Is that considered like an honorary discharge then still, or was he still in trouble for the fact that he lied about the age?
Awesome question. So they let all that shit slide because if you could procure your replacement back in the day, you could pretty much get out of anything.
Find your replacement.
Yep, that was almost like Grover Cleveland had the Polish immigrant take his place in the Civil War. Edgar Allan Poe was like, hey, dude, have you thought about how you might be a good fit for the U.S. Army.
Have you ever wanted to be a sergeant major? The person all of a sudden become a sergeant major.
Now, would he have to find someone that would be level rank as he was when he left, or would he have to find like a new recruit?
I imagine it would be a new recruit because you don't want – if you can, if you're starting a business and you're going to replace an employee with an employee – you'd want to bring them in at the bottom level so it's not costing you a lot of money, I imagine.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you just –
just a thought on that one here. But while he is waiting now, because this is the funny thing here. I got out of the military and I decided I never wanted to do anything like that again. But I'm an idiot, so I tried to be a Port Authority cop. Okay? I should have just learned my lesson. But like, I really don't like – you know, it's not for me. I can do it, but it's not a thing that I wake up every day excited about. But Poe didn't learn that lesson either. He decided, he goes, all right, well, now that I'm out of the military, now I can go to West Point. It's a true story too.
I never even heard this.
It makes no sense. Well, that's what I was fascinated by with him is that so he was a sergeant major at Fort Independence in Boston, and now he decides that he's going to attend West Point, okay?
ROTC.
Exactly, yeah. So he Poe publishes another book. We're going to see that playing out in all sorts of weird shades. So Poe publishes another book while he's waiting to attend West Point. He finally arrives in 1830. During this time, John Allen, his stepfather, marries again to Louisa Patterson. I'm assuming related to John Patterson, so they're all authors together. But with whom he would have significant quarrels, John Allen and his new wife, about the estate and his family and everything like that, which she kind of forces him to finally legally disown Edgar Allan Poe. So Poe is now a man without a family again. So when you're orphaned at age two, and then the guy who brings you in now disowns you after your stepmother dies. I mean, he's got nowhere else to go. It's pretty much – he does have some loose family members attached here and there, but it's not a very happy life, man. He hates his life up at West Point now. Who figured that one out? here's how we got – if you wanted to quit a job, Kelly, how would you quit a job? If you wanted to get – actually even better, if you wanted to get kicked out of school, how would you have done it?
Ooh.
There are so many ways to get kicked out of school. I've seen people throw things out of windows and light their beds on fire. So there's multiple ways to get kicked out of school. How would you get kicked out?
Well, the way that I got kicked out of
– you already were kicked out.
I never got kicked out of school. I did get I don't quit things. I leave them before they can quit me or make me quit rather. But what I did was it made me think of this in a similarity to Poe is that he hated his life at West Point, so he decided to get expelled by refusing to attend classes and religious services. And when he was being brought up against like a tribunal, if you will, to figure out what to do with him, he pled not guilty as a tactic because he figured that would piss them off and they'd be like, oh, you know, oh, and you're not even going to admit that you're not showing. So, all right, you're out of here. You don't have any integrity. It's the same way I got out of the Navy Reserves by not showing up one weekend. And they're like, hey, why don't you show up this weekend? And I was like, oh, I read I didn't have to show up to all the weekends. And they're like, well, that's true, but you're in trouble. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm out. I'm not coming back, guys. So when you're a reservist, you can quit. Learn that. Here's where so he's got a couple really cool – what are some of the titles that he has? Because Poe's a master of a good title, I think. Like, what are
– The Pit and the Pendulum. That's a pretty good title.
It's a damn good title. It, his next book he puts out, though, just called Poems. It's literally okay. Just called Poems. And it was funded –
Are they good poems?
Yeah, they're great.
But what a lackluster title. Hey.
It sure is a – now, it's – It's almost like if our show was just called podcast, you know, that's kind of what it – but
there probably is a podcast out there just called that.
Podcast the podcast?
Yeah, just for the sake of laziness.
Well, his poem – this book of poems, rather, was funded by donations from his fellow cadets at West Point. It's actually in the foreword. I believe there's a dedication to them. But the reason why they all were kind of crowdsourced or GoFundMe'd his –
He had the first – He had the first Kickstarter.
He did.
God damn. That's what was interesting, though, is that they all thought – they probably thought that they were getting these funny poems that Poe would write, where he would write like a satirical poem about the instructors at West Point, where it's him making fun of his teachers, and that's what they thought. It's almost like when you're a little kid and you hear Eminem rapping for the first time, you're like, oh, the real Slim Shady, he's just making fun of pop culture that I hate, and then the rest of the CD is just about taking Vicodin and suicide. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh. Oh, Jesus. I'm in sixth grade. This is tough. But
fourth.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
I was in fourth when I heard Eminem rap for the first time.
It is your BC and AD moment in your life as a child when you hear Eminem.
See, but it's crazy. Like, I wasn't that shocked about it because I grew up in a house where my dad would censor music so that he could listen to, like, the heavy shit. But he would play beep versions just so he could listen to it in the car.
It's one weird thing that if it's going to be like named poems is that you'd think that he's starting to have some success. Still not having any success. When he gets dismissed from West Point, Poe then heads back to Baltimore where his brother dies of – you guys want to take a wild guess?
Syphilis?
Alcoholism, actually.
I was going to guess tuberculosis for some reason.
You wanted to guess diseases.
I swear, Kahuna's plugged into this story without knowing it because he's like a couple steps ahead of us on a lot of – which is good because you're picking
Wait,
up
– Wait, what? Really?
Wait to hear about how tuberculosis comes in here, man. You're plugged into the zeitgeist on this one. I appreciate it.
No mumps.
That's whatever could kill you in Oregon Trail. So Poe, now it does run in the family, alcoholism, so which is weird because, I mean, you're my cousin, Kelly, right? But biologically, I'm adopted, so we have
And we're
no
still co- alcoholics, That's a- imagine.
Yeah, maybe it is a, what's it called, a nature versus nurture argument on that one. But Poe decides when he gets out, man, he's going to go ahead. This is the first time he knew it would be difficult, but he's going to endeavor to, and he winds up succeeding, being one of America's first writers to make a living solely from writing. Because like all the other founding fathers, they were all lawyers that had practices and then they also wrote in their spare time kind of a thing.
So he's like the first full-time writer.
Yeah. It's like when we started this podcast, I was still putting water softeners in people's basements. You know, I wasn't a full-time podcaster. But what I thought was interesting is that at the time, it was extremely tough to make a living as a writer and editor because of international copyright laws. So if you want to talk about the trouble that causes now with streaming and online content and everything – it's going on in the printed world way back then too. So this is 1830s. We're still dealing with that
shit. So was this dude like the first hipster basically?
He's the first many things it seems like.
I wonder – he does rock a good mustache if you've seen a picture of old Edgar Allan.
Oh, I've seen a picture of Edgar Allan Poe. That's part of the reason I suggested such an inquiry.
You might be onto something with that. Let's test that theory here as we go on, because when you notice a hipster thing, let me know here, because there's a couple other very goofy ones with him. He is – first of all, he's forced to beg for jobs from people and he pleads for money from a lot of the admirers of his talent.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, if I ever sat there one day, I was like, hey, Ming Chen, I can't afford – but, you know, I can't afford the studio time, but my podcast is really good, right? Everyone says it's great.
He had like an early Patreon system going on.
Not too bad on that one. It's – But what are other jobs you could get as a writer, Kelly, if you were to
– An editor.
So editor and then probably working on like newspapers, shit like that.
Yeah.
It's
like English what, teacher.
Not bad. That's an interesting one. It's what I would say is that this is where it gets very goofy. You always need a rich benefactor to go to a Dickens world with this one. So the rich benefactor was a guy named John P. Kennedy, who was a fan of Poe's work, decided to help get him published a little bit more in several journals, then got him a job at a prominent periodical down in Richmond. So as always, it pays to know the Kennedys.
Now, at this point, did he at least like have money saved up from his good job that he had going, or was he still in like the midst of gambling bullshit?
It would seem that Poe, while he does achieve fame during his life, never has money.
Yeah, I think he's always poor.
So now, being destitute, I guess, is different, right? But he's got, you know, he's not a well-off dude. Get this one. That job he got hired for down in Richmond, Virginia. Kelly, what's the weirdest way you ever got fired from a job?
They called me up and said, don't come in. Your shift starts in an hour, but don't bother coming in.
Do I bother asking what the job was? You don't have to say it.
No, it's being a waitress, and I was too weak to hold up the trays, and they fired me.
What?
I couldn't carry the trays because I was small and weak, and they fired me, but it was devastating because it was my first job.
No, I hear you.
But they didn't wait for me to come in. They were like, they called me.
Over the phone's kind of.
Well, yeah. But well, that's the real story.
You didn't do what Poe did, though. Poe got fired from that job he got hooked up with down in Richmond from his benefactor, the guy finally looking out for him. You want to make money as a writer and an editor? Well, here's a periodical you can write for. Dude starts showing up drunk, gets fired. I've shown up drunk, but no one's ever figured it out because I realized early on if you show up drunk the first day of work, they just think that's how you are.
You should go on every interview drunk.
Exactly.
Moral of the story.
Like, yeah, he's a good kid. He doesn't make a lot of eye contact.
he falls down a lot.
Oh, crap.
What is that you're wearing, Burke? Is that Old Spice?
KP Burke's tips for life. Show up to a job interviews drunk all the time. Just do it.
They can't prove you're wrong, kid. It's
gotten him this far.
Exactly. Now, when he decides to return to Baltimore after getting fired, this is where it gets weird. Tough episode to have you on, Kel. You're one of my favorite people here, but Poe marries his cousin. Does that weird you out?
Yeah.
I'd have a problem with a guest if they said no.
Good point, too. There's no Poe obtains a license to marry his cousin, Virginia Clem. Poe is 26 at the time, okay? And Virginia is 13.
Okay, so that's another no-no.
Yeah, that's literally twice your age, and then
and your cousin.
Yeah, it's
you're sick.
I really do wonder, like, what conversation can you have? Like, I've got a good relationship with all of my like cousins, nieces, nephews, but there's a certain point where it's like, geez, you're fucking 13. Like,
you're talking about Fortnite.
We have nothing in common right now. You know what I mean? Like, how old's Danny A? I'm not putting you on the spot. Don't worry.
I know he's in sixth grade.
Yeah. But my conversation with him, it's going to be different than like, oh, by the way, we should spend our lives together.
I know. You could talk some Giants, that kid.
He knows his shit. We haven't gotten a good New York Giants reference in yet. I'll find a way to shoehorn that before the end here. But Poe.
Loser life.
It does hurt. But now Poe's starting to get his shit together because he's got a wife to provide for. And Poe promises better conduct. Gets his job back over in Richmond. And now during his time as an editor, you want to prove that you were the right person for a job. He ups the readership from 700 readers to 3,500 readers. So the paper's growing significantly underneath his editing and guidance, I suppose you would say. In May of 1836 – now, he obtained the license a while before this. But in May of 1836, Poe marries Virginia, his cousin who lies about her age in order to be legally married. Poe was responsive as saying, goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
So she lied.
So wait.
He didn't know how old his cousin was or that she lied to the government?
I think they agreed to lie to the government, which is wacky.
Oh my God. I have more questions now, but – oh, you sick fuck.
The more questions you ask about that, the more uncomfortable Poe gets.
Oh, man.
Well, Now, we were talking about titles earlier. This is one of the coolest titles I've ever heard. Maybe you've heard this one in the past, but he released a series of short stories and stuff. Because Poe was a poet by I would say like he's well known for his poetry as well as the short stories. A lot of people can't differentiate between the two in terms of adjusting their styles or whatever, so they're not going to have as much success in one or the other. But Poe seems to be – I mean, he smacks home runs in poetry with, you know, The Raven and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then the short stories we've been talking about. I mean
– yeah, I heard he was famous from The Raven.
Well, I actually found out a weird side note for The Raven. It comes a little bit later on in his life, but essentially The Raven is the height of his drinking. So that's why you have that nice moody thing. Like, you ever get around an alcoholic before 11 o'clock on a Monday? They're just a moody prick. Poe publishes a collection of short stories and poems. This is one of the coolest titles I've ever heard. Tales of the Grotesque and Arabesque, or Arabesque, I guess. Arabesque, I'm going to say. But grotesque, by the way, meaning when we hear that word, what do you think when you hear grotesque?
Disgusting.
Disgusting, like, or?
Appalling, just the worst of the worst.
Well, it was used to describe some forms of art that were like crude forms of art, where like somebody would take a stone painting of like a stone structure, and they would carve like a little gargoyle or something into it. So that's considered grotesque art. Mm-hmm. So we think like, you know, like gross stuff, like, you know, YouTube videos or World Star Hip Hop at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, gross. The
you
word
just
gross
had to bring World Star Hip Hop into
right.
it. We went. We've gone many episodes without bringing them into it. And man, come on, KP.
Well, I just thought it was interesting that that's the start of the word, if you will. Because you hear that word and you think it means different things than what it actually means.
I bet the word gross probably came from grotesque, and they don't even mean the same thing.
We do bastardize stuff. It's off topic, but I think everybody who's listening to this will appreciate this. When you hear the word rapture, sounds bad, right? You know what the meaning of the word rapture is?
Does it have to do with music or something?
Well, the rapture, you think like biblical. Old Testament, biblical stuff, end of days kind of shit, right?
Oh, I thought it was a type of music.
No, it's so the rapture is fear the rapture, but the actual definition of the word rapture is an intense feeling of pleasure or joy. So when they say, you know, stand by for the rapture, we're mm-hmm. always thinking we're going to burn and everything, because probably we're all sinners and the rapture is just experienced by good people. But so it's weird how these words don't actually mean what we think they mean in terms of how we use them in context.
That is quite weird.
But
especially with this word, with rapture, like who was like, hey, this means a good thing. Let's make this mean a bad thing.
I wonder, because words change meaning with time.
All I want you to do is Google rapture, because I need to know if it has anything to do with music or if I just sounded really stupid on a podcast.
Would it surprise you? You could convince someone, goes, oh, you into rapture, bro?
It's Christian hip-hop.
Of course I'm into it. Christian hip-hop is called rapture. That's a great joke. it was beautiful. It's of course, like, we like pretending we're artists, but if you can get a government job, it's a good job to have, mm-hmm. right? They got benefits, competitive pay to a degree. Poe now attempts to secure a job in the Tyler administration, which is post William Henry Harrison, who will be another episode, the shortest president to ever hold office, died of pneumonia in part due to his old age and also giving the longest inauguration speech of all time in the rain. But so now,
how big was the crowd size?
I want to. what made me laugh is that now in the Tyler administration, Poe's got a hookup, right? Poe's got friends and family directed almost to the presidency on this one. Claims to be a member of the Whig Party, but nobody knows for sure. Could have just been like one of those things where you say you're something in order to advocate a future position. But Poe is now attempting to secure this job, and he was a shoo-in for the position at the Philadelphia Custom House, which was his dream job, that he'd be able to work in writing and stuff like that. But missed out on his chance because he got drunk and missed the interview. All right?
Shocker.
You start now again, we're having a little too much in common with old KP here on this one. I have no show
to
interview.
No wonder
interviews
you
before.
Chose the subject.
Too busy listening to rapture music?
It's always.
Okay. Have you Googled that yet? Because you need to prove me right.
January of 1842 in Virginia now, this is where it starts to get a little bummy, is Poe's beloved wife, Virginia, starts. Beginning to show signs of consumption, also known as tuberculosis. All right. The way that they found out was that she burst a blood vessel in her throat while she was singing. So imagine you're just sitting there with, you know, your adoring wife is sitting there on the piano playing, and all of a sudden
you're singing some Dropkick Murphy song.
Doing karaoke.
And all of a sudden, just
she hits the high note for Wrecking Ball, and just blood comes out everywhere.
Oh, my God. but
she burst a blood vessel in her throat, and now she only ever partially recovers from tuberculosis. That's like a death sentence back in the day, pretty much. But she hangs on for a couple of years here. During her illness, if you will, Poe begins to drink more heavily than ever. And it's partially credited, like we were talking about, for the dark mood of his next published work, as Kelly mentioned earlier, which would be
– The Pit and the Pendulum?
No, The Raven.
Oh, okay.
So that got published into The Evening Mirror, and it became a smash hit. So everybody knows the – quote The Raven, Nevermore. Iconic shit. Never going to get old. Everybody's especially that's why we wanted to do this episode around this time frame, because when this one comes out, we're in the height of Halloween season.
We're in spook month.
Indeed we are. And
ravens are scary.
It's not in the AFC, yes.
Do you know what a group of ravens is called? Like a group of them all together?
I'm not giving another wrong answer for the rest of this show.
I don't know either, though.
A murder.
Is it really?
Yes.
You're shitting me.
I'm not kidding.
Dude, that's fantastic.
Right?
I look forward to hearing in the comment section about that one. Where was But so now he puts The Raven appears in The Evening Mirror, overnight sensation almost. It becomes Poe's signature piece and is the namesake of a two-time Super Bowl winning franchise. And he was paid $9 for it.
He got paid $9 for the...
$9 for what would be your seminal work, your greatest work of art of your entire time.
Sounds about right.
I heard he was ripped off often for his work.
Now, I feel like writing wasn't a commodity then. You know, just yet, we didn't understand the value of it, where people are giving stuff away for, like, before patents and stuff like that, people would give away inventions to the public domain. And then you realize now if you just hang on to the patent, so I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. Did he own his works, or did his publisher own them? I bet now The Raven is in the public domain.
You're reading my notes before the show, Kahuna.
Wait, is this something you brought in? Are you serious?
No, it's all of your questions are great because they're questions I had while I'm researching the guy. And what winds up happening with Poe's estate, if you will, is even goofier than his death. But now he gets paid $9 for The Raven, kind of a jip, like you would say, Kel. But after several failing publications and other stuff like that, Poe moves to a college in Fordham, New York, which is now the Bronx, right? So he moves up to the Bronx. In January of 1847, his beloved wife, Virginia, who, despite the fact that they were cousins and he was twice her age, seemed to have a pretty good relationship. He doted on her. But she dies in the cottage that January. And the would you say a theme of Poe's work, Kel, would be that there's almost always a death of beautiful women and haunted houses and shit like that?
There's always people being buried alive, which I think is the craziest thing.
It is the definition of creepy.
There are people being buried
alive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one of my worst nightmares.
After they're dead, they're buried in a weird way, or they're buried alive. It's reoccurring.
Well, he is considered one of the inventors of the haunted house. That is what the story of the fall of the House of Usher is about. And there is an idea that if your wife who you love dies in a rickety old cottage and your life's falling apart, or being in John Allen's house growing up as a kid and then seeing kind of your life fall apart from there, the theme of a haunted house is it's almost a personification of Poe. But which I thought was interesting is that he becomes increasingly unstable after Virginia's death. So now – when you can keep it together for a while, it's fun to be Bluto Blutowski or whatever from Animal House for a little while. It's not fun to be that way in your late 30s, early 40s, right? Mm-hmm. You have a problem at that point. But Poe has become increasingly unstable after her death. His attempts to court another poet, Miss Sarah Helen Whitman, all right?
Finally, someone with a normal name.
Yeah, she does have a nice name, actually. I feel like, I wonder if she's related to Christy Todd Whitman, but... Her mother ended.
Yeah, because we don't have a New Jersey reference yet, so we need to get one in.
It's this one was tough, but Poe is Poe's interesting
just
enough.
Went in. It's fine.
but she ends it after seeing his erratic behavior, that, you know, he's showing up drunk sometimes. He rambles to himself. He's kind of a little bit of a moody guy.
He wrote a bunch of stories about murdering people.
Yeah, well, that – I didn't even think of that. They're like, oh, I've been reading some of your work, Edgar. It's
interesting.
Do you have to bury someone alive every time?
And did you really put an axe in your wife's head? Okay, I'm out.
All right, goodbye.
Don't look under the floorboards.
or in the walls.
That's my favorite, Cask of Amontillado.
Oh my gosh, yes.
If people don't know, what it winds up being is that it's a story. It's the perfect revenge story. It's still studied to this day, I think, right? But that was a fantasy I played out in my head that if you just hide somebody that you didn't like away long enough, they'd forget he ever existed. And you still see Poe referenced in a lot of pop culture stuff as well. But now, not for nothing, sometimes people think I'm drunk and displaying erratic behavior. Really, it's just that I'm on Ambien. It's really what it all winds up being. That's not a Roseanne defense. That's literally Ambien's made me say and do some goofy shit. But I wonder if that's what Poe is coming across at, because Miss Sarah Helen Whitman, her mother cuts it off, right? Poe then returns to Virginia and proposes to his old flame, right? So he missed out on Sarah Elmira Royster the first time, but he's going to try to get her on the gum. She's like – maybe she's a descending nine. You know what I mean?
Now she's, and this is while he's on Ambien, you said?
No,
that was okay. I'm sorry. I drifted there. That was my bad.
Don't worry about it, buddy.
But he's still with
his wife.
He's
the very first person who was ever on Ambien. That's another first.
Another first. But like, this dude.
He was fired
crazy.
For tweeting.
That sounds about right.
Tweeting while on the job.
Would Edgar Allan Poe have worked for Fox News?
It's
no.
Now, what's weird here is that he does never recover from Virginia's death. So he tries to. He tries to recapture the magic of his youth with Sarah Elmira Royster, right? He tried to do that. But he's never going to get over Virginia. It's always going to be – that's the love of his life is his cousin. You know what I mean? Very Lannister-y of them. But now, having never fully recovered from her death, he winds up joining her in eternity. Poe is going to die within 2 years of Virginia dying. And this is where we get down to the weird part of facts versus theories. So, Kel, off the top of your head, what do you know about the death of Edgar Allan Poe?
Well, I've heard two different stories, and one is the one where he's walking down the street, rambling and swearing at the sky, and then another one is that some guy who hated him wrote his obituary and made all of that up, and he really died in a hospital.
It's weird that both of them are right. Both of those stories are absolutely correct.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm so happy you said that. So fact, Poe is found on the streets of Baltimore, October 7th, 1849, in a state of delirium outside of a busy pub in Baltimore, all right, that was turned into a voting poll on election day, all right? So they're voting. Imagine how many more people would vote if you could vote from the comfort of your own bar. You would never have low voter turnout ever again. It would literally be like, hey, guys, we're doing trivia night on Thursday here. We're doing the midterm elections on Wednesday. Come on out. We're doing 2-for-1 wings. All right. All you have to do is show your I voted sticker, and we'll go ahead and we'll give you one free pint of Budweiser Light.
So, if they just have like a casualness to voting. That's, oh, man.
Yeah. Well, now voting, as we know, it is even crazier here. One of the other theories that we'll get into later explains that. But he was found on the streets in a state of delirium, ranting and raving, like you were saying, Kel, by a guy named Joseph Walker. Okay. Now, I've been in a state of delirium from a guy named Johnny Walker, but that's just me. Boom, boom. Got the joke in. But this man recognized him. Joseph Walker recognized Poe on the street. Poe's famous, all right? Imagine we walked out of here, and I don't want to throw the name of any celebrities that have actually been, but imagine we walk out of this studio here at a shared universe that Ming and Zapsik have provided for us, and we see a drunk, rambling Kevin Smith walking around incoherently talking to himself. We're going to go up and talk to him, right?
Totally. Autograph. Selfie.
Taking photos with him.
Be like, so what was the story behind 37?
Well, now he walks up to him and he goes, hey, man, is there anybody I can send for that could take care of you? And Walker then sent a letter by Poe's request to Joseph E. Snodgrass. Now, when we say letter, we think modern terms, couple of days, right? Letter back then was probably more of a text message where it's go rush this letter over to so-and-so.
Pony Express.
Well played. The Edgar Allan Poe Express. So he sends a letter over to Joseph E. Snodgrass. What a fucking name that is. Oh, with the Snodgrasses.
I'm Snodgrass of the Snodgrass lineage.
Oh, the Snodgrass smells of Snodgrass.
I feel bad for anyone that has that fucking last name.
But he was an editor who Poe was acquainted with who had some medical training. And this is the letter that was received by Mr. Snodgrass. Dear sir, there is a gentleman, rather worse for the wear, at Ryan's 4th Street Poles who goes under the cognomen Edgar A. Poe, who appears in great distress and says he is acquainted with you. He is in need of immediate assistance. Yours in haste, which is the modern equivalent of like, hurry up, goddammit.
Okay, but you could have written the same exact thing in much simpler language, and it probably took that guy so long to come up with the perfect wording, and he could just said your friend needs help.
I totally agree. That's how proper they were for the time.
It is hysterical. That letter is so funny.
I must bring to your attention that your friend is truly fucked up.
Dear sir. It's like when you get a spam mail from fake accounts over in India. Dear sir, I am for looking for promote for podcast. Send boobs and vagine. But now Poe is actually considered – this is a thing that they've argued about whether or not it was actually included in the letter – a state of, quote, beastly intoxication, end quote.
So we can't – the letter was never found or
– No, the letter was sent, but they debate, no one's ever seen
yeah. it. Like it's probably thrown away.
Yeah, they debate what was actually said in there because a lot of the story becomes even more shrouded in mystery as we go. But Poe was found to be unkempt and oddly in clothes that weren't his own. Now he was – he wasn't a well-off guy, but he was a pretty good dresser. He was a schnazzy dresser, if you will. But he's wearing clothes that aren't his own, seemingly drunk, rambling out in the middle of the streets of Baltimore, which is hilarious because at the time he was staying in Richmond. All right, so he had a trunk full of all of his stuff in some hotel over in Richmond that he had no clue what had happened to or anything like that. And they said that he looked haggard with vacant eyes. Like there comes a point in the night, we've all been there before, where one of your friends you're at the bar with, they're here 1 minute and then they're still in the room, but there's nothing going on behind the eyes. Right? Is that fair to say?
The lights are on, but nobody's home.
Yeah. Kel, you've probably had to hold some people's hair in the past and stuff like that for them, right? But so there's nothing going on behind Poe's eyes. It's uncomfortable. They want to get him out of there. Poe is never coherent enough to explain what actually happened to him. Which nowadays, we don't realize how lucky we are. You mentioned it in the last episode, you were on, Kel. We are so lucky to have Snapchat that now when we black out, we can watch what happened. That's
funny.
So mine is the weird YouTube history where I'm watching like the Magnificent Seven TV show from ABC from like 1999 at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, Netflix can also track everything you've been watching.
Another good point there. That's did I watch Barbarella again? What is going on with me? So now he keeps – yeah, Poe, this is – keeps yelling out for a mysterious Reynolds. Did you ever hear that one before?
No, but I did hear about why they think he was wearing someone else's clothes.
Oh, boy. We might be arriving at – let me know if this is the thing here. Is it something known as cooping?
I don't know what cooping means.
Okay. Cooping is where – like we're talking about voting.
Yes. Vote early and vote often.
Well played, Kel. So voting back in the day, Kahuna, would be if we were all going down to the – we were just walking down the street and a gang of people came up to us and said, hey, did you vote yet? And we'd say no. And they go, we better go vote for this guy. We're going to kick the shit out of you. And then you come back and you say, hey, I voted for that guy. And they're like, all right, cool. Well, we're still going to kick the shit out of you if you don't go vote for him again. Now go change your clothes, shave your beard, stuff like that. So that's known as cooping where they would act violent. So is that what you were talking about, Kel?
Yeah, that he changed outfit. They found him in someone else's clothing because he was voting over and over again.
Could you imagine that? It reminds me of this one sketch they used to do on Mad TV that made me laugh so hard. It was they would make fun of the Jamie Kennedy experiment. Remember that show?
Yeah.
So the joke would be Jamie Kennedy would show up in a goofy outfit and play a character, and they would see how long it would take them to realize it's a character. But the joke Mad TV did is they called it the Al Pacino experiment. And it would be Al Pacino like, we're going to see what happens when I sit down for dinner. With. And it's just Al Pacino would sit down with like a chef's hat on. And they'd be like, oh, my God, you're Al Pacino. And he goes, no, I'm not. I'm a chef.
That's so funny.
So imagine taking a famous guy for the time in Edgar Allan Poe and trying to present him as a different person than who he is. Like
to get him to vote.
Yeah, the way Poe looked, you could probably argue that it was Laurel and Hardy. But Yeah, so they try to get him to vote multiple times here, and they debate if he was just got roughed up in the mm-hmm. process of it. But now he keeps calling out for this mysterious guy named Reynolds. That could be the dude who roughed him up. We have no idea. Could be a person that told him who to vote for. But he winds up getting into the hospital. Like you said, again, everything you said, those both stories converge here. Dr. Joseph Moran is the person who cared for Poe at Washington College Hospital on Broadway in Fayette. Poe was kept in a prison, very similar. It was a prison cell almost. It was the drunk tank. So mm-hmm. they put him in the drunk tank, and he was denied any visitors. So his final moments are only known by Dr. Joseph Moran. Moran's story changed several times over the years. Many people have been dubious of his version of Poe's final words.
There were no notes.
Well, he gave it was like this beautiful line about the heavens ascending and being prepared to face my eternal father. And everybody's like, there's no way Poe
There's no said, way who yeah. wrote the guy who wrote this stuff said that.
No, exactly. And now Poe was rumored. This is a story Moran tells because Moran liked the celebrity status. He would go on tour talking about how like, oh, well, you know, I'm the one who cared for Poe in his final days. So he tried to make himself a mini celebrity here. But one of the rumors that he would tell is that he told Poe, he goes, you'll soon enjoy the company of your friends, trying to comfort him. And Poe supposedly responded, the best thing my friends could do is to blow my brains out with a pistol.
Oh, so this guy's like early Conrad Murray status up in this bitch.
Well, we've all said some messed up stuff hungover. Where you're on your way for – you're like, there's coffee and Gatorade. And if there's not, I'm going back upstairs and taking my own head off. but supposedly his last words were, Lord, help my poor soul. And Poe dies on October 7th, 1849. Okay. Now we go back into some of the theories we were talking about earlier. Kelly, do you know any other theories with him? Or
just to think it's – I think this might be the truth, though, that his arch enemy is the one who wrote his obituary, and that's so sad.
It absolutely is true. It absolutely is true. It people have pondered whether or not it was suicide, depression from Virginia, because Poe had once – this is where his whole opium thing happens. His whole opium idea that there's a stigma that comes with him too, that it all stems from an incident in 1848 where he accidentally overdosed on laudanum. Which was – they didn't say – it was probably just a miscalculation. People would drink laudanum all the time. It was like drinking OxyContin. You know what I mean? You felt like it was – I mean we have an OxyContin problem today. Laudanum was the OxyContin of the 1840s. So because he overdosed on that, probably by a miscalculation rather than an intent to harm himself, that's what they used to kind of continue this idea that he was a drug user. But alcoholism was blamed by Mr. Snodgrass. He said it was alcoholism that killed Poe. But
yes.
Funny thing about Snodgrass, he is integral to the temperance movement. You know what temperance is?
No drinking.
Yep. No drinking whatsoever. So what
Another
helps your
reason
cause?
To hate this motherfucker.
Hey, there wouldn't be a Boardwalk Empire without him.
Very true. Good old Nucky Thompson benefited from that. But and we got the Jersey reference in. Thank you, Cal.
Hey.
But what would help the temperance movement more than blaming a rising star of the literary world, a famous celebrity, saying that he died young and in very bad fashion due to alcohol? So now the opium rumors were started by his enemies, like we were saying. One of Poe's biggest rivals is said – this is where one of his rivals actually corrected what the other rivals were saying. They said if Poe was using opium, we'd have known about it and we'd have been using it against him for years because Poe had a lot of enemies. He would talk shit about other people's writing.
Yeah, I heard that he did that.
He was the first critic.
And he said mean things about what they looked like and yeah, he
oh,
did.
Oh, he went in.
He did. Not only, yeah, he would
say, not like, not even like a writing critique. Like
no, he'd be like, yeah, and he's fat.
He's fat. Yeah. He's unkempt. His mustache is not perfect.
He did that.
Damn, Edgar Allan Poe, you a dick.
he is – well, you know what it's weird is that I wonder if it's that self-loathing that makes people lash out because I have a lot of self-loathing and that's what makes me really good at roasts for comedy
roasts.
You do
roasts. Not that's have
a, Oh, of course I have. We all have it.
No. It's, we all have a little bit of it.
Yeah. But
I don't want KP to have it.
Well, it's because I think maybe Poe took the hard look in the mirror. You know what I mean? Because he was not a good-looking man. Okay, this was
– Yeah, this dude looks like an upside-down pear.
Yeah,
like his head. Like that. Like
that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yikes.
He really – it almost looks like the
no,
news anchor's son.
No, I'm looking at a picture of him
guy.
Right now, and it literally looks like upside-down pear.
Well, the news anchor's son on Family Guy who has his mouth where his forehead should be, that's kind of what he looks like a little bit too.
Oh,
But they alleged that, again, we're going back to the idea that it could be suicide, depression, the alcoholism. They allude to the opium, but again, his own enemies are saying, like, if he was using opium, we'd have figured it all out. They argue he might have had cholera that he might have gotten from traveling through Philadelphia, which reinforces –
the home of cholera.
C-H-O-L-E-R-A, cholera.
That's almost worse than the Eagles song.
Yep, the cholera Wentz. They also say another possibility, and this one may be the most likely, is that he could have had rabies or he could have been suffering from a malignant brain tumor. So now that theory of cooping we were talking about, which you already went – imagine that you can't really – it almost doesn't make sense to try to pull cooping on someone who's too famous for it to work, like we said with Kevin Smith. But Poe is now dead. He is buried October 8th, 1849, and that is a Monday morning. And as we said, nobody hates Monday mornings like alcoholics.
Okay, well, he died on the 7th and was buried the 8th, mm-hmm. so no wake, funeral, nothing.
Nope, they rushed that bad boy. I mean, I think you had to get him in the ground quick back then too, just on account of the body rotting and stuff.
Ooh,
like that.
Okay.
But the ceremony, not well attended, rain and dreary, very dreary day. So once upon a midnight.
Oh, so he would have liked it.
Yeah, this would have been, this is like nice Irish weather for old Poe. But I did not know this one until today. Poe had no gravestone for several years. He was marked in a grave, literally marked number 80, grave number 80.
Why?
You want to get
– where's the graveyard?
Well, he was dug up from this original grave a couple of years afterwards. But I did find it funny that he's in an anonymous grave marked number 80. You want your New York Giants reference, Kelly?
Go for it.
Victor Cruz, number 80 from Patterson. But
it's New Jersey reference.
And
– it's a twofer.
Wow.
Poe is now reburied years later with a monument in his honor because he had been a hit during his day, right? Everybody knew his stuff, but now he's a goddamn legend. I
mean, what city was he buried in?
Well, he died in Baltimore.
And he was buried in Baltimore?
Mm-hmm. And that's where the monument is and everything. That's why Baltimore has co-opted a famous Boston writer. So, but he was a legend in his passing. So this is almost like the way that we look at Cobain and Tupac and all that other stuff, mm-hmm. is that Poe was big in his day but even bigger in death. So now digging up his body for reburial, if you want to talk about the macabre and the morbid.
Why did they move it in the same city to a different spot?
They felt like that it was an opportunity to – because people were visiting the grave and looking for it. And they raised money with this renewed interest in his work. So they wanted to do a proper memorial for what they thought. They're trying – again, Baltimore needs a hero, okay? They really don't have much going right now, do they? They have the Wire – and Joe Flacco, and that's pretty much it in terms of what to be proud of. Omar's coming. In digging up his body for reburial, the crew accidentally digs up the wrong body.
Shocker. Okay.
Yeah, they wind up it was a Union private that they dug up the wrong body.
Oh, my God.
And the way that they figured out – and Cahoon, I think you're going to love this.
Okay.
The way they figured out that they had the right body is because it was a very well-preserved skull. And they could tell
that it was upside down pear.
So they found old upside down pear Poe. Oh.
That big old. I had an ex girlfriend who jokingly referred to herself as not having a forehead but a five head. All right, and Edgar Allan Poe had a big old forehead. So that's how they knew it was him.
So that's how they knew they got the wrong person at first because the forehead was
like,
too small.
Like, oh, this guy ain't right.
Well, this guy looks normal now.
Apparently, they turned the bodies around when they were burying them without knowing this. So they dug up a couple of wrong bodies, which should be a Poe. If you were to combine Edgar Allan Poe into a modern comedy, like we were talking about earlier, that would almost be the funny thing where it's like you're digging up. If you want to go, I could almost see it as an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode where they're digging up a dead body and they finally get it up there and they pop the thing up and they're like, shit. And then you see right next to the hole they just dug, they're digging another hole.
Yeah, but so was he in a
That's
coffin?
That's a great
and
spec
everything?
Episode.
He was in a coffin. And he actually, what they did is that they dug up Virginia from the cottage in Fordham in the Bronx, right? Mm-hmm. They dug her up and now the two of them have been eterned forever in his monument over in Baltimore. So. His beloved Virginian, him are spending eternity together.
It's so ironic that they were digging up the wrong grave when many of his characters, after they killed someone, told the police basically where the person was buried.
I always liked his use of guilt. in the short stories and everything, where the guilt just completely, because I saw a stage version of The Telltale Heart.
That's my favorite.
And they literally just had like a dun 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 mm-hmm. dun dun just beating throughout the entire theater, and you felt the tension. And I believe it was Hitchcock that talked about using that tension built up by the heartbeat for a lot of his stuff, where he would have a character check like their pocket watch or something, and you hear the minutes ticking down on like a dynamite timer or something. So Poe influenced everybody. I mean, he is just – honestly, he's the coolest guy. He still has his admirers to this day. I thought this was so cool. Each year in the early hours of his birthday, January 19th, for the past 70 years, a mysterious figure will arrive at Poe's grave, toast a glass of cognac to Poe, leave the remaining bottle and three roses at his grave.
How long has this been going on?
That has been going on for 70 years.
Okay, what's going to happen like when that guy dies? Is someone going to take over, or are there going to be multiple people trying to take the spot at once?
Now listen, son, this is the family legacy.
I know it sounds ridiculous. That's what it is. It was they figured out it was a father and son tradition that they didn't care. But they would wear the same type of garb. And then now Baltimore has gotten so into this that they've co-opted it. And it's now, I think, from the Baltimore Historical Society. They send somebody out every year.
Yeah, but what happens if many people want to do it and you just have a bunch of people dressed up over by his grave like that? I bet that happens.
Everybody walks by. They're all just doing a cognac toast. They go, oh, cool. Is Dave Matthews playing? No shit. Concert in the park?
I'm so going.
I'm reading about
next
this.
Next year.
I'm looking this up now.
I'm there.
It only just ended. The original line of it only ended in 2010, but then they revived it in 2015.
Yeah. And guess who's going in 2019?
January 19th. Field trip, Kel.
Yeah,
if you're down.
That's so cool.
So he shows up in the early hours of the morning. He wears a dark dark coat, and then I think a white scarf, and then a big like wide brimmed hat.
And guess who else is wearing a dark coat, a white scarf, and a wide brim hat? All of us.
You're gonna look like Carmen Sandiego. But that tradition is known as the Poe Toaster. Okay, and that happens every year. Like we said, I mean, this is how integral the guy is to the story. He's got an NFL franchise named after his work. People get tattoos of Edgar Allan Poe. He's like the American Gothic master. I mean, people – I still love his work. I have a collection of his work on my Kindle. So this guy has gone from probably scribbling down on a piece of scrap paper his ideas to then having it put through a printing press, circulated in periodicals, put into books, put onto the computer, put into motion pictures, plays. I'm now reading it on my Kindle.
Operas.
No shit. He did operas?
Yeah, someone made an opera out of The Fall of the House of Usher.
No shit.
Yep.
All right. That's awesome. I know what I'm going to be YouTubing on Ambien tonight. I have to check that one out. And we still study his work to this day. But it's also – it shows up in pop culture references. We're going to get it. This is the craziest part here. And I know we're at the hour mark right now. So I'm going to hit this part. You talked about – posthumous character assassination. Okay. Imagine in your head real quick, if you're listening at home, imagine a person you hate. Okay. Imagine a person you just don't get along with. And now you're going to die randomly, young, relatively successful, but a mysterious death. And now the person who gets to tell your story to the world and control how you are remembered is that worst enemy. So I know who mine is, and in terms of the worst enemy thing, if they got to control the narrative of how I was remembered, I would not be remembered probably as I would like to be. I think that's fair to say. Rufus Wilmot Griswold of the Family Vacation Griswolds was an enemy of Poe's during Poe's own life, and the two often disparaged one another. Okay. Poe actually wrote a good review for Griswold's collection of things in order to try to get, I believe, published in one of his other works. So it was like, I'll do a favor for you, you do a favor for me thing. But the two of them did not like each other. And the character assassination was happening while Poe was alive. So if you want to talk about being bitter, Mr. Griswold writes Poe's obituary.
Yeah, I heard he was spreading rumors before he died, and then he wrote his obituary.
Yes, and he uses the fake name Ludwig, as that's his name, that he writes the obituary. Posts it in the New York Tribune. So you and me get into a fight, Kelly. I die. Instead of you sitting there and saying, well, he was my cousin. I loved him. He was fun at Christmas. You
dressed up as Santa every year.
You decide to slander me completely, change how I'm remembering me, and then you take it to the New York Times.
I tell them he was a Cowboys fan.
Yep. Yes, the sober Cowboys fan who hated America. That's me. But – Yeah, so the New York Tribune is the big paper of the day. This obituary gets put in there. And that is now in that obituary, Griswold paints the lasting picture and memory of how Poe's going to be remembered for the rest of his life.
Okay. It does not look like an upside down pear, does it?
It's you are not far off, because this lasting memory of Poe is as a talented but raving madman with a penchant for drugs, alcohol, who was prone to violence. Most of his description of him was taken from a fictional character. This is what's funny here. Griswold got accused by Poe of plagiarism, and that's what started their feud, really. Now, this guy then plagiarizes another author's work to make Poe look bad. So it's like doubling down on being a son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
But
people called him out on this, right? Like back in the day, too?
So Poe had his supporters, too. But in this obituary, he's now painted to look like this wacky character, but it's based off a fictional. So again, going back to that reference, if I die and Kelly paints me as Cosmo Kramer for the rest of my life, where it's a fake character, you know? But Griswold, he's now given the gospel version of what Poe is going to be remembered by. So the same way that Bob Marley was a revolutionary, but now we think of him as like a smiling stoner guy from Jamaica. With time, what the public decides who you were is who you become. So Griswold weasels his way into not only writing the obituary under Ludwig, but he now weasels his way into becoming the literary executor to Poe's work. He publishes all of Edgar Allan Poe's work with permission from the family and everything. Claims Poe gave him permission before he died. Okay.
And did he add grammatical errors?
Well, it's
purposely.
That sounds like something he would have done too. Like.
Well, how Courtney Love-esque is this? That it's like, oh, well, you know, all the Nirvana royalties go through me. And you're like, kind of like, listen, Hole was okay, but it wasn't great.
I liked Hole.
They had a couple good ones. It's including in this collection of Poe's work that Griswold now has published, he includes his own writing, in which he provides the memoir of the author. So he now writes the memoirs for Poe. And the author reiterates all of his lunatic and alcoholic qualities, again, alludes to the drug use and everything like that. And Poe's defenders are like, this is bullshit. Everybody knows you're lying here. But guess what the problem is? When you have the idea – you know how whenever there's a mass murderer, people want to read – you can't wait to watch a documentary on them. You can't wait. Charles Manson's of the world, Jim Jones of the world.
He made him even more famous.
They've now created this air of mystique about Poe. Poe is remembered to this day. Nobody knows who the hell Griswold is.
Right.
Now, Griswold made money off of this. Don't get me wrong. But you've now created the idea that you're reading, like you said, the madman murderer is Poe himself, that he's inserting himself into the – so you're reading a sociopath's work. And it made his legend continue to grow on that stuff. All this stuff was top sellers. The legend of Poe is still through the roof on this one here. But I actually thought this was kind of cool. When I was stationed in the Navy down in Jacksonville, Florida, there's a place called Atlantic Beach. I used to go hang out at a lot. And there was a bar there. There's two of these in the world that I know of. They're called Poe's Tavern. Okay, it's an Edgar Allan Poe-themed restaurant. And you go in there and there's the Telltale Heart Burger.
Oh,
I'm not – I swear to God.
Oh, I've heard of this place.
I have to go there.
And now this is the creepiest part. My buddy's band used to play. So I used to go down to the bar, have a couple drinks or something like that. And I liked being around there. You know what I mean? It's got a cool vibe and everything. The other one is in Wilmington, North Carolina, right, which has probably got knocked out with the hurricane. They'll be up for business again soon, I hope, and please go support them. But what I thought was crazy is this is the weirdest part about the Poe thing, that creepy vibe that you get when you read his stuff alone at night. When you go into the restrooms at Poe's Tavern, specifically the one on Atlantic Beach in Jacksonville, Florida, when you walk in there, there's writing. All of his writing is on the wall. The wallpaper is made up of just pages of his prose and poetry from different books all over the years. And when you get quiet for a second, there's a faint voice of someone reading his work. So.
That's so cool.
Yep. So that's the ambient sound. Instead of having elevator music playing in a bathroom or a little classic rock or piping into the game, right?
You hear someone reading the Telltale Heart or something.
Which is why you'll sit there and I always thought this was funny. I don't know if it's going to be as funny on this podcast, but here it is forever. I thought that there was nothing funnier than when I got done wiping my ass and I said, nevermore.
You know what I would have done, though? I would have made it the heartbeat.
Doof, 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 doof.
Just to keep that – because you're reading all this stuff, but then all of a sudden you just start to hear.
That would be very cool.
Did we miss anything on Poe here, Kel?
I don't think. I mean, you know more about his life than I ever did. I just know about
What's your theory on his death? Like, both, like, your personal theory. Like, what do you believe happened to him? Because I have one, and you're probably going to think I'm nuts, but I want to hear what you guys have to say first.
Well, Kel, you tell me what you, because I kind of think we're going to agree on the cooping thing. I think that was, he did get roughed up, I think.
I think so. It sounds like it, because there's no other reason why he'd be wearing someone else's clothes.
And that was, like, the voting thing.
Yeah. And they were voting. It makes sense.
To be found. Cooping makes sense because you're talking about a guy who's found roughed up. All right. Now, I think it could be a combination of everything. I think he could have been suffering from something. They still do tests on his body to this day to try to figure stuff out.
Really?
Okay.
They really
did. Dig him up again?
Yeah. Well, they saved some of his DNA. Okay. They tested his hair follicles.
Just keep digging him. Yeah.
Edgar Allan Poe, the most disturbed grave ever.
Oh, wait, we need to find out something else. Let's take him up again.
There's a Sam Kinison reference to be made in here eventually. But I would say the cooping thing makes a lot of sense too. But I will also say, because I mean, I've gone on a couple of benders I shouldn't have gone on. And coming off of a bender is one of the most dizzying things you could ever go on. I mean, it is that's alcohol withdrawal. That's having nightmares, hallucinations, sweating, not being able to string together sentences. And that's like after – like you take the end of a good bachelor party weekend and you put that on steroids. That's probably what Poe was doing because they were drinking mostly hard alcohol back then. So I imagine that's probably a combination of all the things, but it would not shock me if the reason he's wearing another person's clothes outside of a voting booth on election day is because of cooping, or I guess not gerrymandering, that wouldn't be the term. But now what do you think, Coons?
Oh, man, this is going to sound bizarre. But, like, what if he, like – what? Like, I do agree that, like, some kind of tussle happened, but, like, when you said the lights – in layman's terms, when you said the lights are on but no one was home, I was like – did this man, like, get in a fight and kill someone but then went on a bender because of it? Because, like, I know that sounds, like, wild. You're like, where did you get that conclusion from that? But you're like, well, he already is a little bit of a madman. This dude has gone on benders like this before, and he's wearing someone else's clothes. And I know that the ballot thing was already there a day before, but you're like, why are you doing that again? Like, did you do something, motherfucker? Like, where did – and who's Reynolds?
I believe the movie is called The Raven, but it stars John Cusack as Edgar Allan Poe, and it is a highly fictionalized account of the last 40 hours of Poe's life.
John Cusack.
I did not know that the Baltimore Ravens were named after that.
Yeah, that is their namesake
so
on that one.
That's so interesting to me.
Well, the
I could see that.
Another thing with literary stuff is that the New York Knicks are named after Knickerbocker, which was Washington Irving's name. It was his pen name, rather, that he wrote Rip Van Winkle and Sleepy Hollow under.
So the Knickerbocker Hospital?
I think that got its name from that as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's just one of the cool things with Washington Irving. But I don't want to start on that one here just yet. I do want to say real quickly –
we'll save him for another loser.
I do want to say thank you, if I can, real quick to Kahuna behind the ones and twos, buddy. Show is better when you're here, man. I appreciate that.
No problem, man.
Cousin Kelly, thank you for subbing in on that one. I love you. You know that.
Oh, I love you too.
It's now on October 27th, if you're listening, because when this podcast comes out on this coming Tuesday, October 27th, going to be opening for Vic DiBattista at the Millstone Theater. I don't get to do many theaters, so I'm really excited about that one. My New York City dates, I don't want to plug because I'm never it'll never come out in time for that stuff. But looking forward to that one, man. That's going to be really cool. On October 27th, you can get the tickets on VicDiBattista.com. If you guys are liking the podcast, I love doing this. I have nothing else going on in my life, all right? If you could subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, follow us on SoundCloud, download the show, just leave a review, share the posts when I put them out every Tuesday. We're doing Tuesday Lose Day. I try to put a new one out all the time. We got something very exciting coming for you guys next week, the week after this podcast comes out. We're going to be doing a live on Facebook episode for our Halloween special. Really looking forward to that one too. Again, guys, anything you do to help the show out, those reviews really do help us too, and it makes things easier. I want to keep this thing going as long as I can. So,
well, it's awesome. I keep telling you this. Like, it is an awesome show. I do have a question for you, though, before you go. Like, I know the show is called American Loser, but Poe didn't sound that much of a loser until the end. Like, I mean, the circumstances of his death, like, why did you pick him for this week? Because he's more fascinating than a loser. Well, to
maybe,
me.
Maybe because he went from being like a sergeant to an ROTC.
See, that part I get, but like...
When you die penniless, delirious in a prison-like cell in a hospital in Baltimore. First of all, anybody who dies in Baltimore...
Loser.
Yeah, not going so good. But no, I picked him because I thought that this is a guy that everybody knows, but nobody knows the final thing of how he wound up.
Okay. You know? And he married his 13-year-old cousin. I mean, come on.
You know what? That's fair. Where do you think he ranks? He's in our scale of
to me,
losers.
He's not a loser because I love his writing so much. So he's not a loser, am I?
No, it's, but we've like – there's like a small scale. We've an unofficial scale we've developed. Like the bottom of the barrel is Gateau.
I would say, Gateau being the sociopath that he was, that's definitely the loser on that one here. But the only thing, because I love this scale thing, I want to put that, I have an idea for that, for putting it on social media that I don't want to give away just yet. But we do want to start ranking these on a scale. But Poe, loser in terms of how he went out, kind of a dreary life. But I mean, Christ, we're still talking about him and it's 2018. So yeah. Maybe he's not so bad here, man. But I hope you guys enjoyed our episode on Edgar Allan Poe. Now, in the natural conversation we like to have here, sometimes we lose sight of a couple of things. Cousin Kelly, we were just watching on YouTube the epic rap battle in history of Stephen King versus Edgar Allan Poe. Now, you immediately said something really cool. You would say Edgar Allan Poe wins hands down. Why would you say? Because we didn't talk about the literary stuff.
I think Edgar Allan Poe wins hands down because he got everything across in a short story, and they were very, very short stories, like 4 pages. And it would take Stephen King chapters and chapters to say the same thing. So to me, that means Poe wins.
So the same way that like we can all say The Shining. I don't want to talk too much about King, but The Shining takes forever in the novel, and people
and it's so good. I don't want to diminish that. Yeah, but if you're going to battle, I would go with Poe.
And you're creeped the hell out fast. Now, the benefit of a short story, like you said, is that – so The Shining, you have to read over the course – you can be the fastest reader on planet Earth. It's going to take you a couple days to get through The Shining. But you were saying that the reason Poe likes short stories is
– he wrote short stories because he thought everything should be taken in one sitting. And you can do that with a short story from beginning to end. You could sit there – and his were short. I mean 20 minutes. You could probably read one of his stories and get everything that Stephen King does in – I mean – and sometimes 700 pages.
And it's still at the same time isn't an insult to Stephen King.
No.
Like, his books are still incredible. And this is coming from someone who really wanted to read 112263.
And it's the best book ever.
It's amazing. But
it is one of my favorite books.
It's literally about
700 pages.
Yeah, it's about three inches thick.
Did you read it?
No, I started.
You have to.
And I really like
it. I recommend it all the time.
You ever watch the miniseries? Because he had a lot of direct involvement with that.
The book is so much better.
I would almost say back to Poe.
Let's get back to Poe.
Yeah. Sorry.
Ah, you're good. You guys are excited. So I appreciate that part because if we lose that, then we lose the soul of the show. But the Poe thing that I thought was kind of cool is that now you're making me think about it. He doesn't waste words.
No.
He has to create that mood of tension and everything. Because I remember the fall of the House of Usher. I went through that one the first time I was reading it, and I was like, this is kind of boring. And then when you're reading the Cliff Notes, when you get through, like, oh, yeah, and he's talking to so-and-so, and then, and there's a corpse chasing him throughout that. And you're like, whoa, I need to be patient and let this thing develop. And you realize he doesn't waste a single word. There's also one thing I wanted to mention, too, is that Treehouse of Horror comes out on The Simpsons every Halloween, one of the highlights of the year. They once did a reenactment of a reading verbatim, word for word, of The Raven with Homer Simpson as the main character of The Raven.
Mm-hmm.
So Poe's always going to be there. But again, he doesn't waste a single word. Everything creates a mood of tension. Telltale heart, like we said.
Oh, my gosh, the tension, definitely.
You know?
And the Cask of Amontillado as they're walking through the catacombs and everything. I mean, the narrator tells you what he plans to do. So you know it's coming. And same with Telltale Heart. He says, I'm going to kill this guy.
Let me ask you guys this then. Like, when you think of Edgar Allan Poe, what do you think is the most creepy or macabre image that comes into your head from something you read of his? Because just from that alone, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like,
Mask of the Red Death is pretty gross.
You know, I never read Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah.
I have to on that. The one that comes into my mind is always
It's modern day Ebola. Like, people bleed out.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. All right, so this is
Well, I shouldn't say it's modern-day Ebola. It's 1840s
Everyone looking like an Andrew W.K.
Yeah,
album
now that
cover.
One's pretty... That's a good one.
Well, Fortunato, when Fortunato gets when he realizes his fate, that he's been poisoned by Montresor, I believe was the guy's name, when he starts putting the wall back together in the wine cellar and mm-hmm. he realizes his fate. Because when people realize their fate, it's unnerving. And it's almost a thing that Game of Thrones borrows from when they leave the sand snakes. When Cersei gets the sand snakes and she has them captured. And literally the mother has to watch one of her favorite daughter die in front of her from poison. Mm-hmm. And they walk out the door. I immediately thought of the Casket of Amontillado. That's the same kind of a thing. Those people's fates are sealed and you're never going to see it. But you just know there's this unpleasantness that hangs around.
And I love that because the guy at first thinks it's a joke and he's laughing. Oh, come on. We're going to have such a good story. Come on, let me out. And then he finally realizes, no, this is where you're dying. It's just – Poe is amazing. If he never wrote The Black Cat, he would be my best friend. But because I like animals, I got a problem with him.
Do you think Poe – I would say this. If we're going back to the King thing for a second that there is no Stephen King without an Edgar Allan Poe.
There's not a lot of people without Edgar Allan Poe.
I mean, we never know if they come up with it on their own, but he seemed to be the first.
People weren't writing his shit.
He is in every anthology, and it's timeless. I mean, Telltale Heart still gets you.
And you guys brought this up briefly when we were recording the main podcast. He was like the originator of the detective novels. Mm-hmm. Like that's...
Which I'm not... Like, I know that, but I've never even read any of his detective stories because they're not as well known as...
It's still Edgar Allan Poe. I'm going to read it. That's
and we all know we could do it in 20 minutes. That makes us want to read it.
Wow, an Edgar Allan Poe 20-minute mystery.
Yeah, not 700 pages, but you still have to read the Stephen King book because it's one of the best books ever.
Will do.
It's all that stuff falling into American Gothic, which is why I thought this was a perfect episode for Halloween. And again, I just want to say thank you guys. This was a cool one. I want to make sure we got that on tape because I thought that was important to the show. So thank you very much, Kel.
No problem.
Sure.
And thanks, Uncle Bobby, for paying for school.
All $7,000 a year of it back then.
Thank you very much. This has been Edgar Allan Poe, American Loser.
American Loser, the day I was born. An American Loser, the day I was born. An American Loser, the day I was born.